Good afternoon or good morning to some of you. Welcome to the Thursday afternoon performing call. Glad everybody is here today. Looking forward to a good call. Let's see. Matt is here working with us today, running the board. So, Matt, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. Getting my last day here at the office before I head back to snowy Denver. They had a blizzard yesterday and shut down the airport, so I'm glad I wasn't leaving yesterday.
Oh, gosh, that's for sure. Now, Matt, I can't see your screen.
You can't see my screen. So, let's see. Can you see it now? It shows that it's showing on my end, so I don't know.
I can't see it. Maybe I don't know if anybody else can see it out there. It could be just me.
We can get some feedback. That'd be great, because on my end, it's showing that the audience can see the Thursday, March 24th, 2016 performing loan call with the logo up there. So I'm getting we can see it. So I think it's
okay. All right. Well, it's just, I guess it's just kind of crazy me. I don't know what's going on here. I guess I don't need to see it. We can just pop it up there. And as long as everybody can hear me, let's rock and roll, man.
Perfect. All right. I'll jump down to the very first question, which is from Michael. And let's double check to make sure Michael is on the call. He is. And Michael, you're good to go if you want to go ahead.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Hey, Michael, how you doing? It's Joe.
Yeah, doing well, Joe. Thanks a lot for asking. My question was just kind of looking at interest rates. I'm kind of new to the whole notes business. I've only been a member for a couple of weeks. And with the interest rates rising, which they've been talking about, that you know is going to happen, how does that impact the note business, or does it?
You know, the note business has never been – it's an alternative for bank financing, but it is it's used as a couple of things. One is a hedge, and number two, most people that are bankable are going to go to a regular lender anyway, I'm going to keep that term bankable in there, because some of the things that would happen, you may have money for a down payment, but your debt to income ratio is not right, or you may have your debt-to-income ratio is good, but your credit score is not good. So there are many things that drive the bankable side of the industry, and so obviously we're not dealing with that side. Now, I will tell you that between 2004 and really late 2007, when the housing market started to crash, it was a significant impact in those four or so years on the seller finance part of the business. And it wasn't because rates were going up, or rates were favorable or not favorable. It was the simple fact that if you could fog a mirror and you had a pulse, you could get a loan. So that was one of the things that affected seller financing then. But as we see, what we're seeing now in the market is not only are interest rates going up, but housing prices are going up, and then there's a shortage of inventory as well in the affordable category. So as far as interest rates having an effect on our business, it actually is better for our business if the interest rates are a little higher. It's not selling, we're not having to sell a higher interest rate when we're out there doing this. So I don't look at it as being a negative at all. I look at it as being, as long as the stringent qualification requirements are there for bank financing, it's going to make seller financing more and more popular. And I think that's the real key driver, is the ease of getting credit versus the interest rate of a loan that it's whatever we're doing. And what are we now at about? We're about 3.75%, 4%. And then, I've been in the business, Michael, when it was God, when it was up, you know, 9-10%. And the great thing is, back in those days, is that we were originating seller finance loans, and if we created those at 10% and the borrowers had 5% down, we could buy a newly originated loan at 94% of the UPB, as long as the term was 20 years and it was a 10% interest rate loan. So I don't really see that as being a challenge. I think it's really going to enhance the business as rates continue to go up. Does that make sense?
I think that answers a good portion of the question. But the other angle that I was thinking of was investment dollars. As people seek higher yields, return on their investments, right now CDs are 0.1%, right? So
right.
You've got this nervous money that wants to come to us, but as interest rates rise, you know, they may be able to get alternative investments and not really look to buy notes, thinking in terms of the cash buyers that are out there.
Right. You know, the other part of that is, as we look at rates starting to rise, it's going to be I can't see someone receiving a 5% interest rate on a CD or a money market account for years to come. I just can't see it. And you know, it's kind of like the Fed is bipolar right now, because I guess it was late January when Janet Yellen, they were talking about, it wasn't when the market was still jacking up and down and it was the big roller coaster back then. You know, Janet Yellen was talking about going to a negative interest rate, which meant that you would have to pay a bank to hold your money. So they may charge you 0.5% a year just to have your money deposited in the bank. And you know, to stimulate people taking their money out of the bank and putting in an investment. And what they don't get is that it wasn't people weren't afraid, weren't worried about the return. They were worried about what to invest their money in. So, you know, I can't see rates, savings rates or CD rates getting up there anywhere near 5% in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. If they do, again, if we're looking at a double that, if you were looking at a 6% on a CD for a 5-year CD, and we can still offer a 10 or an 11 or a 12% return to our investors, I think we're fine. I mean, I think we're fine even at an 8 or a 9 or a 10% still. I mean, we may have to get closer to the 10, but I think that we're fine when we look at the game that that everybody's playing out there. And you know, when we look at the rule of 7,
72.
Yeah, the a 10% interest rate return will double your money every 7 years. The rule,
right.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my take on that. Eddie may have a different take. I mean, Eddie was in the business back in 1981 when home mortgage rates were 18%. And, you know, and survived that and thrived in it. But, you know, I still think the challenge for borrowers out there is still the qualification process. And so we're still going to be in an environment where seller financing is going to be very important. And I still think that investors, if they can get north of 8%, anywhere between 8 and 10%, I think that we're good to go, even if their rate of return by putting it in a CD or holding it at a money market is 5%. So that's my take on it. I'm sure that, you know, maybe we can pose that question to Eddie on the Monday call. But you know, I think we're in a really good position right now with the economy still as it is, especially when you're on both sides of the board, when you're on the performing and the non-performing side, because the non-performing assets are going to continue to be pushed out at a much more rapid rate as we go through that. And you know, my strategy right now, and it has been for the last year and a half, is buy something that I have a very good chance of modifying it, and then selling off a partial. So yes. I've been doing that quite a bit. So it's still, we're in a real exciting time. I mean, it's I can't see anything but good things for the next 5 or 6 years in the seller finance space.
So I guess that the final comment I'll make, and then I'll shut up, is that even if when rates do rise, you don't see any impact to the types of strategies we would employ, exit strategies on either side, performing or non-performing. They don't really, none of them get affected one way or the other with rising rates. We just keep on trucking on with the myriad of exit strategies we can employ.
Exactly. And the part of that that is so exciting for investors with this is that I think we're going to have a whole lot more problems if the Fed starts jacking the rate up and it gets up to 5, 6, 7%. I think there's going to be some problems on that side of it, especially with the people just not being able to qualify conventionally now. Because of debt to income, down payment, the housing shortage is what it is. I mean, those numbers are up or down. So it's really a good and exciting and really a profitable time to be in the note space. I think I feel very confident that we're in for a great long run on both sides of this business.
Great to hear. Thanks.
All righty, very good. What's up next, Mr. Matt?
All right, so up next we've got Perry. So let me check to see if they've made it on yet.
All right.
Go ahead, Perry.
Hey.
Hey, Perry, it's Joe. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, Joe, good. How are you?
Very good.
So, yeah, it's a pretty newbie question, actually, So I got hold of a private lender, who can lend money at 5% interest rate, and I was looking at some of the performing notes that you guys have released, the rate of return on that was something the higher tens, right? Or the mid ten. I believe this note was gone, or sold. I didn't see it yesterday.
Okay, all right, gotcha.
So, yeah, I was wondering, how I can structure a deal by which I can borrow money at 5% and get a return at 10% and pocket the difference,
Yeah, so let me ask you a couple of questions about this private lender. So he or she is strictly looking at a 5% rate of return. What kind of term will they allow you to have on this?
Well, I haven't got into the details of that yet, but I really didn't know if I can structure it. So, I didn't want to get into too much of it without knowing if I can do it or not,
Here's what I'm thinking on this, Barry, is a couple of things here and a couple of questions you need to go back to this gentleman with and get an explanation on. Number one, what kind of term are you looking at? Is he looking at doing this over a 1 year, 2 year, a 5 year period of time? Is he going to do this as it would be a line of credit where you would be able to access that as you need it? And number three would be how much money that he really wants to deploy at this point in time. I would also ask him, is this just liquid cash sitting in an account, or is it sitting in a self-directed IRA? So mm-hmm. I think that would be some of the questions that you want to ask him as far as the strategy that you're looking for. Now, as far as the strategy to make this work, if he wants more of a short-term investment, and I would ask him how he wants you to pay him back on that. Is this going to be an interest-only situation where you're just going to pay him interest only on a monthly basis based on the amount of money you have? So think about those in terms of what you want to do, because your exit strategy may change based on that. So let's talk about one scenario that you could do. So it would be buying a performing note using this investor money. And so you buy a performing note, and then you structure a sale of a partial on that so that you can put a bit of money in your pocket when you sell this, and then you own the back end, that you sell the partial for enough to pay off your loan on this, or your investor loan on this, and you possibly put a couple thousand dollars in your pocket on the sale, and then you hold the back end of the payments. So here's kind of the way that would look. You've got your money investor over here that's looking for a 5% rate of return, and then you're looking at an IRA investor or somebody that's on the other side of that would like to buy a partial at 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years, whatever that looks like, so that you can get the money back to pay off your investor, your 5% investor, and you hold the back end of the loan. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah.
So in that case, you don't need the money for, you know, you may need the money for 3-4 months. Now, if it were a long-term situation and he had quite a bit of money, I mean, certainly you could buy these things and hold on to them and play with the rate between the two. If you're buying it, if you're borrowing at 5 and you're getting a 10, 11, 12% return, you got some arbitrage there that you can play with, the difference between the two interest rates, and that's your play on that as well. So what was your question there?
So instead of me doing a partial, yeah, so I just wanted to make it like a monthly payment, you know, and the terms will be just like how the remaining of the notes number of months is, you know, that is what I had in mind, you know.
Right. Okay, well, you know, here's the thing. It's all speculation until you go to this individual and figure it out, okay, and figure out what he or she is looking for as far as a rate of return. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Not as a rate of return, but on the length of the loan period. So if he's going to do this and he's just going to let you stretch it out there over 5 years or whatever it is, then, you know, that's you've got a lot more time. If he's wanting to keep his money rolling between the different investments, then you can do that as well. But I think, you know, one of the strongest pieces of that is being able to buy a note and then sell the partial on that. You're going to build yourself up a really strong back end as you're holding those things. I know that unless you just have you're good right now, and you want to, and you don't need a lot of upfront cash right now, then that's a great strategy. Or you structure, you when you're looking at a note from Colonial, you look at a note that you can sell the partial on for enough plus a couple of $3,000 on the other side of that to put back into your pocket and then hold the back end. I mean, imagine being able to do, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 of those a year. Or 10 of those a year, you know, as long as, you know, just really the sky's the limit when you've got somebody that's looking for such a low rate of return. Or if you have something that you're not able to sell a partial immediately on, then certainly you can play the game between the two interest rates.
Okay. Yeah, that answers the question. Yeah.
I mean, you know, here's the thing, Corey. Most investors like that are looking for a much higher rate of return. So the fact that you've got somebody that says, yeah, I'll just kind of loan you whatever you need at a 5% interest rate is an amazing thing. Everybody that's on this call today would love to have that type of situation to go there. So Evelyn is asking a question here, and it's a very good question. She said, how would your investor, how would they be secured? And have you talked to them about that also?
Yes.
So what are you going to do with that? Is he going to hold on to the note? Is he going to, what does that look like? What's he going to use as security? Or do you have some other assets that you can tie up with him? Or is he looking, you know, is he just somebody that just really likes you and really likes what you've told him, and he just go with you as long as you make that monthly payment to him.
So yeah, we've been talking about it, you know, and he likes the kind of business, you know, that we are doing here. So just to, you know, get things started and see how things work, you know, he said he would lend like $25,000 or $30,000 at 5% interest rate and, you know, see how I make the payment for the first 6 months to 1 year. And if all goes well, you know, he says he is ready to invest more funds from his IRA. So first he said this money, $25,000 or $30,000, will be his personal money. You know, it's not coming from an IRA or anything. It's just coming from his checking account, you know. And if I'm able to pay back him, you know, every month, you know, without delaying, and he says he will invest more funds with me. Well, he's my neighbor.
So perfect. So, Pari, your play on this is very simple. You're going to buy a loan. Look at the loans through Colonial. So you're going to buy a note, and you're going to start play as you analyze the different notes and do your due diligence. What I want you to do is you're going to get on the power quota that you've got there, and you're going to say, okay, if I buy this note from Colonial and it's got a 12% return on that, what are the chances? How much of this note do I have to sell to get back enough money to pay my investor his lump sum of money back? Or if he's just looking for a 5% rate of return and that's going to be less than 0.5% per month, just take the money out as a loan, and then you can play with these things and buy them and sell them. I mean, he may not like the fact that you would be, you know, you'd buy a loan, you'd use the $30,000 this month, and you pay him back 2 months later the money plus 5% interest. So the play here really is to use is to buy full, sell partial, and keep those back ends. You could really do some big things based on that.
Okay.
And so Wallace Wong is asking, are you asking about doing an arbitrage on the interest rate, meaning that the note pays 8% and you're paying him 5%, therefore keeping the 3%. And the answer really to that, Wallace, is that, yeah, even though the note is an 8% rate, we're buying that at a discount. So if Pari is buying that note at a 12% yield, then the money really is between the 5 and the 12, or the 5 and the 11, whatever the yield is on the investment that Pari is buying. So I think that, again, the play is to go ahead and purchase that and purchase a note. Just make him a monthly payment on that. You know, what can 5% be on $30,000? I mean, is he going to amortize it, or is it going to be an interest only loan? 5% on $30,000 is $1,500 a year. So what's that? About $125-$30 a month. So that's absolutely, you know, there's nothing there that you've got to be concerned with.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So does that make sense?
Yes.
Good. Okay. So, but Pari, just understand that this is a great opportunity for you. And just, if he's willing to work with you on that, I would certainly go ahead and get the money in place. Buy it, find a note that works into that specific category that you're looking for there. And meanwhile, you need to be looking at someone that is interested in buying a partial in their IRA. And you've got your pieces together.
Okay. So I didn't have this question.
Pari, here's one other play that you can think about on this. And you may spoil him, but you could always sell this fella your partial and ask him if he has friends that would like to do that as well, that have money they want to invest as well. So just keep that in mind as you're kind of walking this path with this guy. But I wouldn't let him off the hook. I would make sure that he's got the money available. Go ahead and find a note in the offering there and make sure that you go ahead and get it done and roll down the road with this thing.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Really good. We've got some other questions here as well. So if the investor holds the note, then how would Pari be able to sell a partial? That's really not even a – Pari's investor is not even looking at that. He's looking at Pari as a as just doing a loan with him, not worried about really about what that collateral looks like at this point. Wallace says, right, looking at a yield of 5%. I get it. Okay. What Donald says, what is the best way to determine what notes are available after the list has been published for a week or two? Hey, Matt, I see you answered that. And I know we've got some exciting news. And are we introducing the new platform prior to Summer Summit, or are they going to introduce that at Summer Summit?
I think that's going to be something that we are going to announce at Summer Summit, because not all of the gears are quite in place, and so we don't want to announce anything that hasn't quite been finalized at this point. But yes, there is something coming forward that is going to help with that situation, Don.
Yeah, and I know that Eddie and Bob and Charles, and I think Matt, you've been there kind of working on this, and you've been on the inside of this as well. But the new platform for
the word there, Joe, is shh.
Okay.
That wasn't my impression of Mr. Speed, by the way.
Oh, was that Eddie? That was Eddie?
The word is shh. More news to follow.
Gotcha. Okay.
You'll be good.
Gotcha.
Really good.
I still don't know if this is Matt or Eddie.
Really? You think Matt can imitate me that well?
I hear you now, Eddie. Excellent. So what's going on with you, Mr. Speed? Thank you for being on the line today, buddy.
Oh, I just monitor things.
Good. Anything you would like to add? Hey, while you're on the line here, Pari there was, he's got an investor that's looking at a 5% rate of return, and we were talking about buying short and sell, or buying full and selling partials. I think he's got a great situation there, don't you?
Yeah, you know, that's such a low return.
I know it is.
He's probably going to have to get the investor a net return and agree to pay the servicing fee out of that, which is
right.
Generally how I go about doing it. But you could, and just, you know, net the investor 5%. And
hey, Eddie, and while you're on the phone, and you know, we talked about this a bit at the first of the call there, but I can't remember who it was, Matt. Was it that had the question about the difference in the rates?
Michael Rogers,
yeah. Michael had a great question there, and he was talking about what's going to happen to our business as interest rates start to increase and the Fed starts moving interest rates up. I think it's a great thing for our business. You know, we can operate no matter what the rates are. He was concerned about investors looking for a higher rate of return, but you know, my reply to that was, man, it's going to be a long time before banks are going to start paying on CDs north of 3 or 4%. My feelings anyway. What are your feelings on that, Eddie?
I think there's a bigger discrepancy in bank rates and what investors can earn on investments on notes right now than we've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, if banks start paying 3% on CDs, if you're earning 7%, you're earning double times what the bank's paying.
That's right.
People just aren't buying notes and earning 2 or 3% interest.
That's it.
So
that's it.
The second thing is, I don't think there's anything in the forecast that says that we're going to see a big jump in rates in the next 3 or 4 years. I've been to mortgage bankers. I've been to IMAN. I've been to lots of conferences with economists and people forecasting mortgage rates and interest rates overall. And there's, you know, the conversation of the day is just not that. If we had a big spike in rates, then that is what triggers the need for seller financing.
Right.
And how I got into the business was in 1980, right? 20% interest rates is what caused me to get in the seller finance note buying business.
And that's what we talked about just a minute ago. I know when you started, they weren't that way when I got in the early 90s. But yeah, when you were there, I mean, it was common for it to have an 18 to 20% mortgage interest rate, and people were doing it, you know?
Yeah, so a rising rate market accelerates the note business, but I'm not selling that right now.
No.
I'm selling, we have a lot of inventory of notes and a lot of people with dry cash. I don't think that there's any realistic expectation that we're going to see some big surge in rates that are going to put us in a whole different economic cycle. I don't see it being bad if that were to happen. I just don't think it's going to happen.
You know, especially with the inventory levels at what they are right now. And I can't imagine the Fed being raising those rates up above if they got to 4.5 or 5% or whatever it is. I can't imagine it going anywhere north of that. And the banks don't have to pay a higher savings rate at this point either. So I know we're great on this. So anyway.
Yeah, that's all a philosophical conversation and who the heck knows who's right. But it's not a big stock market adjustment in the next 12 months. I think you can about write that one on the wall. Ryan says it's going to be after the election.
Yeah, so it could be late this year, early next year, but that's not that far off.
Well, historically, there hasn't been like a Black Friday or Black Tuesday thing right before a presidential election. Okay, that's historical.
Right.
Okay, so Ryan was in the office this week and says, I don't really see a big drop. I see a lot of volatility this year, but I don't see like a big drop in stick. But he said, you know, I mean, is it going to happen? We all know it's going to happen. Everybody thinks stock market's overpriced. So those are things that I think are more predictable conversation about what happens in the market.
Well, and you know, as that continues to drag out, we know that it's going to happen. We know that it's not going to, most likely it would happen. It would be a significant event if it were to happen prior to the election in November. It's that ongoing fear and anxiety of people that, you know, are saying, I'm just not putting any money in. If I can get my money out of the market at this point, I'm going to go ahead and do it. And if I've got to park it, that's what it is. So,
okay.
All right.
What else, guys?
Matt, what do we, and I'm having computer problems today, so Matt's helping me. So, Matt, what do we have up next?
All right, so, Fred, you are unmuted and ready to go. You're good.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Fred, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I've been trying to find a resource to handle the escrow and document prep for a note purchase that I'm buying the note from someone, you know, outside of the typical note school colonial axis. So what kind of person should I be looking for?
Is it on a partial?
No, it's a full note.
Well, we've talked to Guardian Law about handling the escrow and the documentation on a partial, and everybody's kind of that's done it to date with them has really kind of been a guinea pig because it's not, we're just still kind of working through a few little bugs. I don't see a reason that they couldn't do the whole note.
Okay.
But once again, it's kind of a guinea pig thing. So you're buying an entire note and I'm going to sell an entire note to an investor.
Well, currently I'm buying it from somebody who, you know, owns it. Yeah.
Well, are you trying to flip it?
Well, at this point, we're trying to get inventory to have four people who might want to buy partials in the future. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me ask you the question again. Are you trying to flip this note, or you got the money to buy it?
No, we have the money to buy it.
Okay. Why do you need escrow to sell it?
No, I'm buying it.
Why do you need escrow to buy it?
I guess that's what I'm asking, Eddie. I have never bought a note outside of Colonial. I had assumed that there needed to be an escrow and,
No.
Okay.
You have them dry sign the documents, and then you wire the money to them. I hadn't been to a title company to do a escrow money to buy a note in 10 years.
So I can just fill out the RISPA buy contract, and they countersign it. I send them the money. They send me the note.
All right, Fred, let me be clear about this.
Right.
When you are buying an entire note, you're going to use a specific buy-sell agreement that relates to buying the entire note, not a partial.
Right.
Okay, now that is available on the membership site. Okay.
Yeah. So, I've got it. They do
the buy-sell agreement. They endorse the back of the note, right? They do a transfer of lien. They sign all of those things. And when you get receipt of those things, and obviously you're holding the title search, you have receipt of all those things, then you wire the money to them. And
okay,
I can tell you from experience, we've been buying notes from individuals that way for years and years, and nobody ever questions it. You just say, this is how we do it.
Okay. Is there a list of all of the documents that I need to get completed for this?
I don't know. I can't tell you where it's at on the membership site. That's probably a help desk thing. So you just go to help desk and say, here's what I'm trying to locate. Where is that at?
Okay.
But that's...
And on the member site and the performing side, there is a purchase and sale agreement. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I'm filling that out. It's all the other things, the allonges, the assignments, the,
right.
You know, like Eddie just said, sign in the back of the note. I didn't know anything about that. So it's those kind of details that I need either some hand-holding or an explicit list to make sure everything happens.
And that's a help desk issue.
Okay.
One of the things that we find, I got no issue with you guys asking that stuff on the call, but like if you're on the call with me on Monday or Tuesday and you're asking me where to find something on the membership site, that's going to be the wrong guy. You know, now if you want to ask me how to do it, something I've done 20,000 times, or, you know, the flavor of how it works, or how to that type of thing, then that's that. And so don't ever hesitate to ask on call content, but that doesn't mean we may not say, now you need to go to help desk and ask them specifically where to find an entire list of the closing process to buy a whole loan.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense.
Okay.
I just want to make sure I don't miss something important.
You're asking a very important question. Absolutely.
All right.
I know it's on the membership site. I just can't tell you where it's at.
Okay. Email's going off to help desk right now.
What's that?
The email's going off to the help desk right now.
All right, perfect. Excellent.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate it. Just let us know. All right. So looks like we have up next, let me scroll down here.
Mark, Bruce, and Deborah.
Very good. Are they unmuted on this one?
Let me see. Got Mark unmuted, and let me get Deborah. You're both unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey,
very
Joe.
Good. Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, Joe.
Good. Can you hear me?
Yes. Can hear you just fine.
Wonderful.
Excellent. So what do you guys have going on? Looks like you're looking at a sub-performing note. Are you buying this through Colonial?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So talk to me about what's going on here.
We've listed the particulars. The BPO says it's worth $45,000. There's an unpaid balance of $40,000. There's 136 payments left, principal and interest of $475,000. The next payment due date shows December 1st, according to Peak.
And that could be just it may be some transferring issues there or so on. So yeah, it's so what are we looking at? We're March, so they could be two payments behind, or it could be that there's just some issues there as Peak was servicing the loan also.
Well, the question is when was the date last paid?
12/1 of 2015.
What was it?
December 1st of 2015. So we're about 3 months.
I don't mean the due date. I mean, when was the date last paid?
Actually, I have another email from Charles. I think it was paid February 18th. And I do believe I got more information on this one that there were 3 months deferred, December, January, and February, so that she could be caught up and considered current.
So you understand that when you're buying a note that is called subperforming, right? And you understand what that means, right? We're not saying it's perfectly performing.
Correct.
Okay. Then what I'm looking for is frequency or recency of payments. Not the due date, but when they paid.
Yeah, we got information from Charles after we sent this in last night. Okay. It seems our real question is, what we're pretty sure we're going to have to take this property back from this woman based on her history. She's been evicted 4 or 5 times from different properties. We're 90% sure we're going to have to take this back from her. And we're good with the BPO value. We know what our cost is. We think we're either going to have to resell it as a 50-50 or rehab it and sell it with owner financing. How do we evaluate our risk based on the condition of the inside and how much it's going to cost us to rehab the thing when we get her out?
Kid, if I'd have known that 35 years ago in the note bins, I'd have been a genius.
Okay. So it's just roll the dice and hope.
Hey guys, this BPO also shows that the property is vacant, but I can't figure out why they would have marked vacant, because this particular property doesn't appear vacant from the BPO pictures.
Well, you guys have heard us talk about BPOs a lot, right?
Yep. And so how can we confirm that it is or isn't vacant?
Order of property inspection.
Eddie, is that done prior to the note purchase or after?
In my mind, you're looking at a picture of it appears to be occupied. You can send an inspector out. The NDS can do a property inspection. It's no big deal. We certainly don't mind if you want to do that. You might see if we got some collector's notes that if the lady is indicating that she lives in the house. You know, I'm looking at this house. You know, this is just the classic deal of the sub $75,000 house. All the comps are cash. What's this house rent for?
$950,000, I believe, is what the BPO says.
If that house is worth only $40,000, I'll shoot myself in the head.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, it's just the classic deal. It's like anything under about $75,000, all the comps are cash comps. Because the bank it's not making loans on the houses. In fact, all the retail sales of 50-50 and owner financing, they're not in MLS or any kind of turnkey properties. So the real deal in that deal is you hear me say the joke and you're saying, well, why do you order BPOs? Because our world operates on BPOs when we're buying and when you buy, right? But the deal is you can sell it for traditionally, let me do a big disclaimer, traditionally you can sell it for way more than BPO. As far as getting very literal on the BPO, on the BPO and it says it's vacant and something else indicates it's occupied, you just get comfortable with it. Internally, Matt, I don't say that we'd ever, we probably never dug in any deeper because we really didn't care, did we?
That's true.
So the answer is, when we bought it, we probably weren't, we probably disregarded what the BPO said. Now, just because we did that, I'm not saying that you should have to do that, right? You just do what you're comfortable with.
I'm a recovering rehabber, so I'm, I apologize for that. So I get concerned about the interiors. How do I get more comfortable with?
You're not. You're not. That's why you're buying it so cheap. I'm just telling you, you're not. Okay. You ain't going to go shake the toilets on this deal.
Well, I understand I can't. I'm just, so all right, shift gears. Shift gears to another question.
I'm not going to. I'm not going to candy coat it for you. You're. I have no way of knowing it.
Right.
I can look at the outside. I can tell you from years and years and years of experience that, you know, that when you see a house with that kind of outside, it's usually, you know, going to need some repairs inside. But it's, you know, I mean, I'm just saying that's just what, that's what we do, you know. But okay. But that's why notes are the price they are compared to REO.
All right. We see three options for the house is sell with owner financing, as is, rehab it, and sell it with owner financing or 50-50 model.
Yeah.
Deborah and I both kind of want to do the 50-50 model a lot.
Yeah.
Is there something we're not thinking of other than those three options?
With a $40,000 BPO and $950 in rent, and a $950 what a customer would pay as a mortgage payment, including probably escrows, there's just no way about it. You got to note your way out of this deal. This house is worth $70,000 to $80,000 if you note yourself out of it.
Okay, so one of our three choices makes is what's going to make sense.
It does. Now, if you were, you know, if you were in a college area and you could have some parent that's got a kid going to college, and you see what I'm saying, there could be other variables that are unique about the story that I would go, oh, well, there's other options here, right? But just generically across the country, I mean, you know, I don't have any, I don't have a rent facts or I don't have any crime data on this. It doesn't look like a terrible neighborhood to me.
It's outside of Pittsburgh and it's in a sea of green, according to Trulio.
Okay, well then the answer is it's just one of those markets that's too cheap because the banks have left the financing out.
All right. A property a national property manager for the 50-50 model. We're trying to find one of those and we're having a challenge.
I already got them. It's NPS and they are launching a substantial system right now that's going to have a crazy dashboard and all kind of stuff. That's one of those big announcements we keep talking about at Summer Summit. You know, the other one that Joe spilled the beans on earlier? You remember that one, don't you?
Can we call them yet or do we need to wait till June?
No, they're not ready. They're not ready. You could call them, but I would be fearful that they're not.
Well, we don't want to mess anything up.
They don't have their front door unlocked yet.
They
have been seriously in the business a long time, but this is a new system that they're launching as part of the 50-50.
Okay. Is there someone else besides them?
It's not like this might happen. It's going to happen. They're just got programmers working on a dashboard and some stuff right now that's just not quite there yet. We've got two or three programs that we got programmers burning up the keyboards on right now to be able to position it for Summer Summit.
Hey, Eddie, on this particular asset, there are two liens against Stonecrest. Can you take a look at those? I think we sent in the files and we're not quite sure how to handle them.
There's like a school tax lien and a might be a water lien. And they're from 2010, I think.
Well, is that our title search?
Yes.
National asset.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That really is going to be an acquisition question. I assume that when we bought this asset, we historically review those kind of things. We would have required that they were paid. But I don't want to say that's absolutely the case and come to find out I'm wrong.
So how do we handle that?
Matt will circle that back downstream.
Okay.
And we'll just have to see. Normally when we do a buy, we have a very elaborate spreadsheet where we evaluate any underlying liens or any encumbrances and stuff. You're not wrong in reading what you see. I just don't know what the result of it is. It's possible that that was paid as a result of the closing, and we just didn't get a new title search after the fact.
Okay.
It's a very good question.
Another question that we have on this asset, Eddie, is it's on a land contract with a probationary period. The pay history on this guy is really squirrely all over the board, and we're not sure because there's some pay history missing for the 6 months of pay, a probationary period. Can we extend that probationary period based on his?
What are you talking about? A probationary period?
Probationary period where we can evict them instead of having to foreclose.
What?
There's a 24-month probationary period where it says in the land contract.
You're totally misinterpreting that. That probationary period says that they can, if they want to pay for it, they can convert it to a note in mortgage at the end of 2 years. We've traded probably at least 1,000 Stonecrest assets with that in the document. We've seen about one of them want to convert.
So that's what the probationary period means.
It's just an option. It's not a probationary period. Okay, it's an option at the end of 2 years that they can convert to a note in the mortgage, subject to the loan being absolutely current and compliant, right? Taxes have to be paid, they got to have current pay history, all that kind of stuff, right?
But so it has nothing to do with evicting them?
No, you got a land contract.
Hey, Mark, Deborah, also realize that probationary period is expired a long time ago, so
you certainly wouldn't have to do it because they're not current on their loan.
That's right. So it's a standard.
But I'm just telling you that I know the guys at Stonecrest. When we first saw that in there, we're like, oh my god. Well, now that we've traded 1,000 of them, it doesn't really matter. That's what they said. We knew them well. The guy that actually runs the trades for them used to work for Bob and I. Used to be a counterpart with Charles Mangan. And he goes, I'm telling you, Eddie, we don't ever see these things pop up and then wanting to convert. I think we've seen like one, maybe two, in 1,000. So I'm just giving you an element of risk in whether you're going to have to fool with this or not. You wouldn't have to now because the guy's not current.
So we could go in and evict just based on his lack of being consistent.
Buying a land contract. You understand? You're not buying a note mortgage. It's not been converted. You're buying a land contract.
Got it.
So all that says is that the 2 years, if they're perfect, if they want to convert, they can. But they got to pay for it. And you just don't ever see these working class people wanting to come back and do it as a practical matter.
Right.
So basically,
it's clear that I'm not saying that's impossible, right? I'm just saying it's improbable.
Yep, I get it. So based on his pay history, we would be within our legal right to evict as soon as we purchase the note based on his pay history, if we decided to do that.
I don't know the customer story here, but if that customer was three payments down and hadn't made a payment in 3 months, if we let them make a payment and bring it, you know, and start paying again, there was a pretty compelling argument. This wasn't intended to be an extend and pretend.
Okay.
So that would have been a total banking decision. I don't know why he decided to do that. And just because he did doesn't mean he's 100% right, but he's right a high percentage of the time.
Yeah, pay history in 2015 was really, really spotty.
Well, 2016 could be a better year for him.
Amen.
We'll hope for the best and plan for the worst, guys.
Yeah, that's what I'd say.
You know, but really, Deborah, Mark, on this, the if you want to do the property inspection, like Eddie says, if that makes you a little more comfortable with this, that's of course your option to do that. But again, as just to restate it, as Eddie said there, you know, price gives you multiple options, and you can see what those options are, and basically that house is worth somewhere in the $65,000 to $75,000 range all day long, either as owner finance or rehab or 50-50, and that's really the play on this. So does that kind of take care of that for you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Very good. Mark?
Yep, I'm good.
It's a great question. This was an excellent case study. It really was.
All right, Matt, we have a couple of announcements we need to make, starting with Martha's Mastermind and then running through the Titanium Mastermind as well, and then finishing up with Summer Summit. Did you want to play the video today?
Yeah, we'll play it there at the end. But, Miss Speeds, they've got about three spots still available. So if you are wanting to come to the event, I know the ladies have a really good time and kind of put a different perspective on it from just having a different perspective on it. So I know the last one that they went to, we had some videos and a lot of good comment coming back from it. So it is a really beneficial mastermind that they do, and all proceeds from that do go to the Child Welfare Board to making sure that note recovery center is up and going for everybody. So also the other thing is that the email for post closing. So if you buy an asset and you have any issues whatsoever, you're trying to find an allowance, you're trying to find an assignment, or you're trying to figure out why a deed hasn't been recorded or where it's at, please send your questions to postclosing@colonialfundinggroup.com. And then if you have a question before it gets sold, send it to offering. So if you're wanting a pay history, or if you're wanting to find out about these documents, and in either case, we may end up sending that to content because it might be a question that would be best served for everyone on the call. So just so everybody knows that too.
And again, we're just trying to streamline the process to make it as efficient as we possibly can there. So excellent. And Matt, the Titanium Mastermind as well.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, that's coming up here in less than a month. So the biggest thing about that is we have a pretty good idea of who's coming, but if there are any stragglers, we do need you to register. If you can figure out within the next, you know, if you're kind of waiting on some deals or waiting on some business opportunities and you're kind of trying to figure things out, as Mr. Speed always says, make sure that you have extended your taxes and then come home, because the reason why you extend it, as he says, is that you have a lower chance of being audited.
There you go. And then finally, we've got Summer Summit that is rapidly approaching, and I think that's going to be probably the best one ever. Matt, do you want to run the video real quick for everybody?
Absolutely. Here we go.
Hey guys, it's Eddie. Summer Summit time, June 3rd through the 5th, 2016, is going to be at the American Airlines Training Facility right outside the DFW Airport.
I think there's three dimensions to Summer Summit and the Note School family all getting together. I think there's process, I think there is the emotion of dealing with the business, and I think there's relationship. It can be due diligence, it can be closing, it can be boarding a loan, it can be post-closing, it can be a creative exit strategy. What would the Note School Mega Experience team do? What would they do in this situation? We found that we can really go deep when we get everybody together with a like-minded process and a like-minded background. It's been said that entrepreneurs who can emotionally deal with what goes wrong survive. It's getting up and dusting yourself off and fortifying in your mind that you can do what it takes, even though there's obstacles in the road. Without relationship, I would have never built a note business and done the things that I've done over the past 35 years, and I don't believe you will either. Relationship means that you have somebody that's been through similar experiences and been through similar processes. This relationship cannot be replaced on the telephone. This relationship and the life friends that we make in the business is done at live events. You need to connect with people in the business that can inspire you, and those are the things that we are trying to make sure that are happening when we all come together at Summer Summit.
All right, so remember, here's the deal. It's June 3rd through the 5th, 2016. Here's how you're going to register. You're going to go to noteschool.com/summersummit. Remember, we're having a one-day bonus class taught by Dykes Botterford. That's going to be on June the 2nd. So there's two registrations. There's one for Summer Summit. Doesn't cost you anything. And then there's the Dykes Botterford class. $250 for a primary, $200 for a guest, and that includes transportation and a meal at the Fort Worth Stockyards that evening. It'll be a fun time. Dykes Botterford's a brilliant guy. We'll see you at Summer Summit.
All right, very good. So guys, this is this year is going to be bigger and better, and we've just got so many new things coming down the pike, and you certainly won't want to miss Summer Summit, so please go ahead and get that taken care of as soon as possible. The office will be closed tomorrow for Good Friday. So guys, I want you to have a great weekend, spend some time with your families, and focus on those things this weekend, and we will be back on board next Monday evening. Eddie will be on the call, and we look forward to talking with you then. So get out, do what you do every day, and we appreciate you being on the call. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you very soon. Bye-bye, everyone. Thanks, Matt.